ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So unless we're in parallel universes, we are on 8th canto, chapter 19, text 19. Yeah? Otherwise you can blame it on Bhakti Storm. Mam Pachobi. Oh, that is cool. Nu Dwarka Kijai. Aya. Samaradya. Lokanam ekam Ishvaram para shayam rinite yo buriman dvipa dashusham mam vachobi samaradya lokanam ekam Ishvaram Paratrayam Vriniteyo Buriman Dvipadashusham Mam Vachobi Samaradya Lokanam Ekam Ishvaram Paratrayam Vriniteyo Buriman dvipadashusham Mam vachobi samaradya Lokanam ekam ishvaram Paratrayam vriniteyo Buriman dvipadashusham Mam vachobi samaradya Vaishnavis. Mam, me, Vachobi, by sweet words, Samaradya, after sufficiently pleasing, Lokanam, of all planets in this universe, Ekam, the one and only, Ishwaram, Master, Controller. Padatrayam, 3 feet. Vrinite, is asking for. Ya, he who. Abudiman, not very intelligent. Dvipadashusham, because I can give you the entire an entire island. Translation. I am able to give you an entire island because I am the proprietor of 3 divisions of the universe. You have come to take something from me and have pleased me by your sweet words. But you are asking for only 3 paces of land. Therefore, you are not very intelligent. Also, and this is Bali Maharaj, of course, speaking to Vamanadeva. I am able to give you an entire island. Because I am the proprietor of the 3 divisions of the universe. You have come to take something from me and have pleased me by your sweet words. But you are asking only for 3 paces of land. Therefore, you are not very intelligent. Purport. According to the Vedic understanding, the entire universe is regarded as an ocean of space. In that ocean, there are innumerable planets, and each planet is called a dvipa or island. When approached by Lord Vamanadeva, Bali Maharaj was actually in possession of all the dvipas or islands in space. Bali Maharaj was very pleased to see the features of Vamanadeva, and he was ready to give him as much land as he could ask. But because the Lord Vamanadeva asked only for 3 paces of land, Bali Maharaj considered him not very intelligent. Omagena tamarandasya gyana gana salakaya jakshushri militangena tazarishi gurvain namaha. Prabhupada was being interviewed by the BBC. And they asked him, but according to your Vedic view of things, the world is flat. Of course, Prabhupada answered, everywhere I walk it is. It was a sublime answer. And then Prabhupada said, except for New Vrindavan, which had those hills, But Sariputta Prabhu explained to me that just like the word Atma, Atma can mean the body, Atma can mean the mind, and it can mean the self or the soul, our actual self, depending on context. So this word Bhumandala has different meanings. It can mean Bhartvarsa, just the Indian subcontinent. It can mean the earth, planet. And it can mean the plane. We call it, even the materialists, they call it the solar plane, or the planetary plane, of all the different 9 planets. They say 9. Because they're all, if you look at how they're lined up going around the sun, it's a plane or it's flat. So when the Vedas describe the world being flat, Bhumandala, it's talking about the solar system of all, that's what it means. So they misunderstand in so many different, with their own little infinitesimal brains, they find some fault. So they say the Vedas describe the world as flat. But it's actually talking about it says Lokadvipa. Lokadvipa means round island floating in space. They knew that the planets were round. They had their understanding of things. Here's another far-out feature. It describes, when it's describing the Kapiladeva, it's describing the movements of the living entities. It describes how the point of conception, the father plants the seed within the womb and how it develops. And it describes it. So many months, eyes develop, the different holes in the body. Everything's described there. 7 months that it becomes conscious. Now, how did they get that? I mean, they don't have ultrasound back in the Vedic times, but there's a completely accurate description of how the child is developing within the womb. Do we have a baby? We must have a... Achcha. It's written somewhere that the baby has to be there in class. It's nice that the child is hearing. So, how did they know these things? They say the materialists, Bhagavatam is written. They used to say 1500 BC. And they're actually gradually moving it back. They usually say it's 1500 years old. And it's the composite of folklore, family stories put together, and it was written by a composite of rishis, and it's been modified over the years. They have so many theories. But an interesting thing, in a section of the Bhagavatam, it describes how all the villages on the banks of the Saraswati River. So they say, well, it's just, they've heard about it and they added it all in. But they've discovered, they say, that the Saraswati River dried up 12,000 years ago. So if the Saraswati dried up 12,000 years ago, and yet in the Bhagavatam there's a description of its course, which is accurate, and all the different villages, how did that happen? If it was only written 1,500 years ago, now they say 3,000 years ago. So the point is that the Bhagavatam is, because it's coming from Krishna, if I'm looking up a hill, suppose I'm climbing up a hill. I can only see a little bit in front of me. And I don't know to go left, to go right. But if someone is at the top of the hill, looking down, they go, oh, no, don't go that way. There's a bunch of cactus. And, oh, don't go that way. There's it goes off a cliff. There's a ravine. You move left, you move right. So someone is at a higher level looking down can give a very accurate description. We now have, Prabhupada, have you ever seen, we're going to get to the body of the thing, but just as a preface, you ever seen how a building, they demolish a building, it implodes, it collapses on itself? You ever seen that? They did it recently downtown in San Diego. There were three buildings, and the one they wanted to destroy was right in the middle. And a devotee sent me a clip. You can see, and the whole thing just collapses with the other two buildings in the other ones on the bookends, completely unaffected. You know how they do that? Magic? Mantra? Do you know how they do it? Yes, you're correct. And to elaborate, 10 points for you. You get breakfast prasadam. But they get it. You get a civil engineer. Or an uncivil, but either way, you get an engineer. And they understand the structure of the thing. And you blow out the linchpins, the key stress points. And once you blow out those support systems, the thing just collapses on itself. Because of where we're entrenched now, we think this is reality. But people's vision of the world changes. It's changed many times over. They used to think that the world was flat. They used to, Christopher Columbus, you can just sail off the edge. They used to think that hell was below and heaven was above. The age of faith, then they had the age of reason, then they had the age of enlightenment. They had so many different, they give different labels of things. Then they sailed into the industrial age, which was hellish. When I didn't sleep very well last night, so my mind is wandering. I apologize. But what was I going to say? No, I was thinking about the industrial age. Ah, thank you. When Arjuna, it's described in the Mahabharata, there was, how did it work? Agnidev is getting offered all kinds of materialistic offerings, swaha from all the materialists, and he has to digest all of their karma. There was a drug dealer that wanted to give Prabhupada a bunch of money. Prabhupada said, I cannot digest your money. So, if you eat all kinds of rich and different things, you get indigestion. So Agni was getting indigestion. Swaha is Agni's wife. So he was getting indigestion. So what to do? And sometimes you get those Ayurvedic herbs, a little package that helps you digest. So he wanted to digest a whole forest. It was going to be burnt up. And that forest, it would solve his indigestion from all the inauspicious people offering him different things. But to test Arjuna, because who is Arjuna's father? Do we know? Do you know, young man, who's Arjuna's father? Anyone know who Arjuna's father is? Indra, yeah. So just to test him, when they tried to light the fire, the Indra would come and pour rain on it. So that this, I forget the name of the forest with all the herbs, it wouldn't burn. Huh? Thank you very much. Again, too, Dravida, you're fulfilling the role of Dravida. Dravida is usually my fact checker. So, thank you. So the rain would come and put the fire out. So I think it's Agni, asked Arjuna, can you help me? And Arjuna knit with his arrows an entire umbrella over the forest. So Indra was pouring his rain, but he was defeated by Arjuna's expert archery. And you know, if the son defeats the father, he actually likes that because he's carrying on the noble lineage. So Indra was very pleased, actually. And there was a demon named Maya Dhanava living in that forest who would have been burned to ashes. And Arjuna saved him. So when he got, there's so many things in the Mahabharata. So when he came out, this Maya Dhanava, he wanted to give Arjuna a benediction. And the first thing he wanted to give him was this, I forget the name of it, Yantraveda, which is how all the machinery works. And Krishna told him, don't take it, it'll spoil everything. So instead Arjuna asked for his horses. That's how he got his horses that, traveled the speed of the mind and like that. These they can travel all throughout the universe. Try that with, a Porsche. No, I was thinking of, what are they called? What is our train system? What is it called? Yeah, whatever you call it. Try that, traveling through all the universes. But the point is that Krishna said to Arjuna, it'll spoil everything. So it's not that they don't know it. They asked Prabhupada one time. Prabhupada said, there are three ways that you can fly, a newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada was making the point that everything you've got is in the Vedas. There's nothing new under the sun. We're not impressed. So the man said, well, what about these planes? Prabhupada said, you can chant a mantra and make anything fly. Flying carpets, flying our airplane, you can make anything fly. Prabhupada said, or you can chant a mantra and have thousands of birds come and they'll carry you. You might have to go to the dry cleaner afterwards, but anyway, they can carry you. Prabhupada said, or you can make this tin can and fly with this mechanistic, materialistic thing. They're so proud of it. Fly the friendly skies. So they asked Prabhupada, well, then how did you get here? Why did you, there's all these other mantras, why did you come by an airplane? Prabhupada said, just to be one with you. It's Prabhupada's answer, So there's nothing, and Prabhupada describes in Nectar of Devotion that whatever they've got, the different yogis, they can actually. Prabhupada said that his music teacher, the guru of his music teacher, was a yogi. And just to test him, there's two. No, it's all right. It's just a baby. What can you do? It's nice that the mother wants to hear. Although there is a line that shouldn't be. We'll see how enthusiastic the baby is. But anyway, anything they can do, it's already known in the Vedas. So the music teacher, just to test him, the music teacher asked, the guru of the music teacher, when he was a young man, hello up there, you have just officially crossed the line. See what you can do. Because it's distracting to the audience and the speaker. So the yogi, the guru of the music teacher, who then told the story to Prabhupada, asked, what would you like to eat? And to test him, the student said, fresh pomegranates from Afghanistan. Now, we're in Bengal. They're out of season. You didn't buy them in the marketplace. And the yogi said, the guru said, go out to the front room. Prabhupada tells the story this way. So he went out to the front room, and there was a branch broken off a tree of fresh pomegranates, like they'd just been delivered from Afghanistan. So whatever they've accomplished, to travel on the rays of the sun, they can travel all over the universe, so many things. So we're not so impressed by them. And all the knowledge is there in the Vedas. The point is that we know, whatever they know, the great rishis and sages and yogis, they knew far beyond whatever they could do. They travel in these little tin cans. They crash all the time. They lose them sometimes. Did they ever find that Malaysian Airlines? Huh? Never found it. How many people were on it? No, it was a couple hundred. So, you know, whatever they can do, the Vedas can do better. But as it's described here in this verse, did we read the purport? Yeah. He was considered not very intelligent. How long do we go till usually? 8:30? All right. The accumulation of things is considered success. Here he's describing that I could give you anything. I'm the owner and controller of the entire universe. I can give you an entire planet. And you're asking for 3 steps of land? You're not very smart. Do you know what Vamanadeva's response was? Anyone know? For 10 extra points? Okay, it's all I need, but there's a dynamic underneath it. Yeah. Huh? Ah, very good. Very good, young man. That if I'm not happy with 3 steps of land, I'm not going to be happy with unlimited steps of land. Krishna describes that lust burns like fire and is never satisfied. What is the famous mantra after Christmas, after they're, all the plant, everything's ripped open and they've gone through all the boxes? What do the kids always say? Is that it? And what used to completely fry my parents was that they would buy all this stuff. We'd rip open all the boxes. And as kids, we would have more fun playing with the boxes. We'd make a fort out of the empty cardboard box than whatever was in it. It used to drive my parents nuts. I was sitting with Ambrish one time, Alfred Ford. And we were at some fundraiser or something. And whoever was the speaker said, money can't buy you happiness. And Ambrish turned to me with such conviction, as someone who actually, had understood that. He said, money can't buy happiness, they say. Ambrish said, people who don't have money hope that it's true. Because if you need money to buy happiness and you don't have it, well, then you're up a creek without a paddle, So people who don't have money hope that money can't buy happiness. Otherwise, they're finished. How are they going to become happy? Because they don't have money and you need money to be happiness, to be happy. And then he turned with such conviction, very quietly said to me, he said, and those who have money know that it's true. It's actually true. He told me that he had a family, the DuPont family. Their big chemical company. I think Monsanto is the one who says better living through chemicals, which is really a farce. But the DuPont kids, when their parents would go to Europe for 6 months or whatever, they would party in the house and completely trash it.
you know, light the staircase on fire, break all the windows, whatever it was. And they had so much money, literally money to burn, that they would redecorate the house. And when the parents would come back from Europe, they said, oh, as a surprise, we've done it's now French Mediterranean. Or the next time they say, oh, we've done it in modern, you know, minimalistic, you know. The parents say, oh, thank you very much. So they had so much money literally to burn. And they were racked with suicides in the family, alcoholism, you know, fifth wedding. It wasn't DuPont, I think it was Getty, who said there's only two types of people in this world. And he wasn't talking suras and asuras. He said there's people you pay to stay with you and people you pay to stay away from you. It's a very unhappy way to, if you think about it, that the only reason anybody's around you is because you've paid them to be there. So, if we're not, what is happiness? Happiness comes from some toshanam, some siddhi hari toshanam. We find that the devotees, I remember, I was at Radhakund, just, you know, there for the morning, doing parikram around Govardhan Hill. And I saw these two, good morning to you, sir. I saw these two sadhus or rishis, old babajis. And they had the loincloth, you know, half cloth, not even enough for a full dhoti. And they came out, you know, absorbed in their internal meditation. And they had each had a pot. They were going down to the steps of the Radhakund to get some water for bathing or whatever they were going to do. And they met at the top of the stairs. And I was at some distance. I couldn't see, but I mean, I could see, but I couldn't hear. So I could understand what they were. You know, they met at the top of the stairs. And they said, oh, Maharaj, let me get water for you. You don't want to go all the way. They were old men, all bent over. You don't want to go down the steps. Let me go for you. And the other one said, no, let me get for you. No, let me get for you. So they were arguing, you know, out of affection, who was going to serve the other. And then I could see from a distance, they saw the water pot, so one man grabbed the other man's water pot. I'll go for you. He said, no, I'll go for you. And they were tugging on the water pot, and they were both so old, they both fell over, you know? And they were like, and then they got up and they began laughing. You know, this isn't working. So, all right. And I could tell that they'd made an arrangement. Because one of the yogis, one of the babajis, went with both pots down these stairs and the other men sat at the top. And they said, no, I'll go for you today. Because this isn't working. So I'll go for today and you go tomorrow. So one of the babajis sat at the top of the stairs and the other guy went down, the other sadhu went down with the two pots. And I was thinking, this is such a nice mentality. I was saying yesterday here that you can't change circumstances. The world is going. We can't. People think they're the controllers, but I mean, what are the four Kumaras? They explaining to Prithu Maharaj that, in spite of the best of a good boat, excellent captain, sometimes the ship sinks. I mean, so many, the world's full of sunken ships. In spite of an expert doctor, sometimes the patient dies. In spite of, what is the example? Good parents, the child goes bad. And the flip side is also true. You get these boat people that sail, you know, inner tubes across the, you know, from Cuba, 90 miles to America. So, in spite of a good captain, a good strong boat, sometimes it sinks. In spite of nothing, they sail across the ocean. Expert doctor, sometimes the patient dies. In spite of, you know, the last rites, the man survives.
My favorite example is the guy in San Diego who, what was his name? Pine. It's a Bengali name. Went into the hospital, tonsillitis. Outpatient, you know, he was supposed to be in there for 3 hours. He didn't even spend the night in the hospital. He was going to be there for 3 hours. The wife went to the mall, was going to come back and pick him up. Physician made a mistake. The surgeon nicked something in his throat. They hemorrhaged and the man died. The wife came back to pick up the husband and the guy was gone. So in spite of a good physician, sometimes something goes wrong. The point is that we are not actually in charge of anything. One devotee in Detroit was saying to Prabhupada, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen, I'm the most sinful, I'm the most this, I'm the..." Prabhupada stopped him. Said, "Actually, you're not the most anything. Sit down." And that's our actual position when you actually think about it. We're not in charge of anything. Kali Yuga is the bottom of the boat. The bottom of the barrel. And we're thinking, you know, that I'm this or I'm that. And no. So, if we're not, what will actually make us sad? I was in Bangladesh. I apologize if I've mentioned this before. And there was a college kid. And I said, "Hey, we're having a nice program tonight. Why don't you come?" He said, no, I'm too busy. I don't have time." I said, "What are you busy doing?" He said, "I have to study for a test." So just to figure out where the guy was at, I said, "Why?" We're not anti-education, but I asked him why. He said, "Well, I want to get a good grade." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to graduate with honors." I said, "Why?" "So I want to get in a master's program." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to get into a PhD program in America." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to get a good job." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to make a bunch of money." I said, "Why?" He, you know, where is this going? So he said, I want to make a bunch of money." I said, "Why?" "So I want to, you know, get a big house and a big screen TV." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I want to get a beautiful wife." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, then I'll be happy." I said, "Aha. All these are intermediate steps and you want to become happy. That's your goal. You want to become happy. But I come from America. They have so many big houses, big wives, big screen TVs, and they're all completely frustrated." My mother she's passed away now, but she had high blood pressure, so they gave her a medicine for that. Had a side effect. So they gave her another pill to counter the side effect. Well, she said, "But that caused another side effect." So we went to the doctor. They were, you know, because of this pill caused this, solved this problem, but created this side effect. This solved this problem, but it created this side. She was up to 7 different medicines. She told the doctor, she said, "This is depressing. One cause, 7 different medicines. It's depressing." They said, "Oh, we got a pill for that." She said, "Get me out of here. Forget it, you know." We took her to an acupuncture, solved the whole thing, you know. So all these are intermediate steps. The goal is happiness. And what is it? Dharmasya hi apavargasya. That dharma is meant to put an end to the cycle of pavarga. Anyone know what the cycle of pavarga is? Yes, young man. Yeah, but Archon knows. We already know he knows. We'll give you get the floor. You know, there's these horses, because down in Del Mar, it's where the turf meets the surf. Every now and then, I didn't know this, we have a trainer. We have a guy who comes to the temple. He's a very nice young man. He said, every now and then you get a horse who says, "Wait a minute, what am I running for? I'm working out, I run around, I come back at the exact same place. I'm not doing this anymore." You get a horse, every now and then they ring the bell, they open the gate,
And there's one horse that says, hey, you know, where are we going, guys? You know, and why? And say, once the horse realizes that, you've lost them. You can use them for stud, you know, for raising other horses, but they're never going to race again. They say, you know, I'm knocking myself out, and I come back the exact same place, and what do I get, some hay for it? Forget it, I'm out of here, you know. Every now and then you get a horse that clues in, says, this is a complete waste of time. So in a similar fashion, you know, people are working so hard, but what do they get out of it? And what do I get? We had a Indradumna Swami. He told me this. They were in Vladivostok. You know where Vladivostok is, young man? Yeah, you. Do you know where Vladivostok is? Go home and Google it. Yeah, check it out. It's a horrible place. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It's on the coast of the Pacific. Everything freezes. It's a nasty place. So, Indradumna Swami, and it was just as Gorbachev was in power, and the only hall that was big enough for the program was called the Hall of Atheism. It was a big picture. That's what they rented for the program, you know. Lenin is spinning in his tomb. You know Prabhupada's joke? Prabhupada saw everyone lined up at Lenin's tomb in Red Square. You know why they're all lined up? Make sure he's dead. Who said it? Prabhupada loved that joke. Prabhupada, you told it many, many times. To make sure he's dead. Horrible thing. So, the point I'm trying to make is you can... Bali Maharaj. And why are these people celebrated? You know, they cover of People magazine, and they've got the houses of the rich and famous, but they're not happy. You can stack up so much stuff. What is it, the bumper sticker? Those who say money can't buy happiness don't know where to shop. But they're not happy. So this young man, you know, he wanted to do the whole program. Go to America, work hard for years and years and years. But you see that the devotees, Krishna is so kind. Patram pushpam palam toyam. You offer a leaf, a flower, a fruit. Prabhupada says, who can't get these things? Who can't? You know, if you don't have it, you can ask your neighbor. Can I get a leaf, a flower, a little bit of water? Will anyone begrudge someone that? And we see when you offer it to Krishna, you become completely satisfied. It's the most mystical thing. Prabhupada said the senses... They had a convention. It's Prabhupada's story. And they determined that we're working so hard and we offer everything to this stomach. You know, the eyes are looking here, the hand, the tongue is chewing. It's a lot of work. You give everything to the stomach. They said, no, we're going on strike. So this is probably the Prabhupada tells the story. They decided they're going on strike, that the hand wouldn't give to the stomach. And the tongue was tasting, but he wouldn't swallow. So after some time, Prabhupada said, the strike committee, they had to call an emergency meeting. Anyone know why the strike committee? They were not giving anything to the stomach anymore. All the senses are keeping for themselves. Why did they have, young man, I'm picking on you. Yeah, you. Why, when all the senses... decided we're not giving to the stomach anymore, we're keeping it for ourselves. Why did they have to call an emergency meeting? Who said that? Ah, very good. Yeah. Although it appears to be logical, if you don't give to the stomach, the rest of the body becomes weak. Suppose you have a neighbor moves in next door to your house. This is Prabhupada's example. And you see that he goes up, he gets a big ladder. You know, you want to check out the neighbors. Where are they at? New neighbors. And the guy, take his ladder, has his water pail, and he starts watering all the individual leaves of the tree, big tree. He's up there on the ladder, watering each leaf. What do you think about your new neighbor? Smart guy? What do you think? I'm asking you. Yeah. Yeah, you, right there in front. New neighbor, big tree, gets the ladder out. He's got a little eyedropper, a little spritz bottle, and he's watering every leaf. What do you think? Smart guy? What's? I'm locking my doors at night. Guy's off the wall. And you go out and what do you tell that man if you're kind-hearted? Hey, my friend, there's a faster way. It's a lot. Just water the root. Really? Are you sure? Trust me, it works. A whole tree will be nourished. You think, oh, hey, that's a good idea. Thank you very much. It's the most amazing thing. People are all mad after collecting so many things. Think about it. They're all out there, this Bacchanal, this Christmas fest. And it brings a whole world of people who are unsatisfied. I didn't get what I wanted. It wasn't the right size. I put on a few pounds. It's too snug. Not the right color. It's not big enough, not fast enough. I didn't get enough. I wanted a dozen. I only got two. And yet, when you take the same thing that you're not satisfied with and you offer it to Krishna. I had a guy, I swear to you, bit into an apple, said, ah, it's nasty. You want it? Oh, that's charity in the age of Kali. You go, well, if you don't want it, why do I want it? Didn't make you happy. How is it going to make me happy? And yet, the most mystical thing, when you offer it to Krishna, something nice to Krishna, you give it away, some siddhi haritoshanam, you become completely satisfied. It's the most amazing thing. You offer it, like this building, you know? What was this? It was a church. It was some kind of Methodist, you know, whatever it is. But the point is, we can open our doors. Everyone's trying to keep for themselves, lock it up, do not enter. You know, what is it? Protected by Smith and Wesson. I mean, every man's their castle. They got their, you know. It's a gun, Smith and Wesson. And yet, we had a devotee. I won't mention. Well, I will mention his name, Sadananda. You know Sadananda? So he was worried about Y2K. So his plan was, he spent tons of money. And he put all the grains, you know, macaroni, rice, whatever he had, he put it in 5-gallon buckets, and he buried them on his farm. I said, you know, Sadananda, when they realize, if Y2K comes, which is not going to come, but if it comes, they're all going to, hey, you're the guy on the top of the hill with everything, they're going to come with their shotguns and take everything. I said, you're actually putting yourself at risk. I said, Prabhupada said that if such a thing happens, what are the devotees do? What do we do? Okay, fine. That's the basic false, fallback position. But Prabhupada said we take whatever we have, we cook it up into nice khichdi, and we distribute it. We offer it to Krishna, and we distribute it. And everybody's happy. And you're safe. If you think I'm going to lock it up, keep it myself, they're going to come with a big shotgun and steal it. So if we actually cook it up in a nice khichdi and distribute it, everyone is satisfied. Everyone is pleased. You offer it to Krishna. Krishna is pleased. We're pleased. So Y2K didn't come. Sadananda had everything buried all over his farm. He forgot where it was. It's a true story. He had to hire some guys to come out there, and the whole place was like Swiss cheese. There were a bunch of, because they were digging all over, they were trying to find, because you know it's couple thousand dollars worth of food, and he forgot where it was. They're out there digging, trying to dig it up, you know. It's the wrong move. If we just try, whatever we have, we try to please Krishna. Lo and behold, we cook the Sunday feast. And I don't know, what does the Sunday feast cost here in L.A.? Cost to cook the Sunday feast? Yeah, it's not cheap. And we cook it up, we offer it to Krishna, and we distribute it. Please, take prasadam.
and everyone becomes satisfied. Krishna is satisfied, the guests are satisfied, the cooks are satisfied, the pujaris are satisfied. It's the complete... If we learn the science of simply pleasing Krishna, you don't have to have a big house, you don't have to have a big car. Krishna is satisfied with whatever you cook, whatever you offer, Krishna is satisfied. If it's offered with devotion, Krishna is satisfied. Is it, what is it? Is it, in, again, from Mahabharata, that Vidura, is it Vidura, was so happy that Krishna was visiting his house, he was in such ecstasy that he was peeling bananas, throwing away the bananas, and offered Krishna the peels. And Krishna ate it, fully satisfied. What is it? Why do we know why Rukmini stopped Krishna from eating more of the chipped rice offered by Sudam Brahmana? Anyone know why? How will he ever pay him? How will he ever pay him back? Chip rice, dry, not very tasty thing. But because it was saturated with so much devotion from Sudam Brahman, Krishna was very pleased. And on the converse, was it Duryodhana? That Krishna wouldn't even eat the fancy food that he'd cooked and offered? Krishna wasn't interested. So the simple point we're trying to make is that everyone is struggling, everyone's trying to accumulate, everyone's trying to stack up stuff, and they're not satisfied, and they shoot each other over the, you know, drive-by shootings. But if you offer to Krishna, everyone becomes satisfied, everyone becomes pleased. It is the great mystery of this world. This big house, big temple, everyone's trying to make a big house. Man is king of his castle. Prabhupada was on a walk. Bhavananda told me this. We'll end in just a second. Prabhupada was walking in Beverly Hills. So many big houses, right? So Prabhupada was walking along. He said there was a nice big Mercedes parked in the driveway. Prabhupada said, someday we'll have a big car like that for Krishna. The devotees all said, Jai. Prabhupada walked a little further. Big house, big mansion. Someday we'll have a big house like that for Krishna. The devotees all said, Jai, Prabhupada. Walked a little further. There was a dog, big dog. He came running. You know, hit the gate. The gate kept him back. Prabhupada said, someday we'll have a big dog like that for Krishna. The devotees said, Jai, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you fools, what do we want a big dog for? Okay, you know. They were just whatever Prabhupada said, Jai, you know. On one hand, it's sweet. But big house, big car, big that, big bank balance. When you drop dead, where does it go? You're gone. Bank balance. Prabhupada says, like seaweed, you know, it in the ocean current, it brings it together. And then the currents, and it all separates. Big house, big car, big nation, big family. Can't take it with you. But if you offer it to Krishna, everyone becomes satisfied. It's the most mystical thing. So Vamanadeva is making that point. Big Bali Maharaj playing the role of a materialist. Oh, I have this, I have that, I can give you this, I can give you that. This is mine. I'm big, rich, and powerful. And it's all finished by the currents of time. But if that same thing you offer to Krishna, everyone becomes satisfied. So we can end there. Who's actually intelligent? Because what is the goal? Are you happy? And all of your big, big stuff, all stacked up nicely. You're not happy. They're not happy. It's all taken away from you. You're in big anxiety. Oh, death is coming. Finished. So that's actual intelligence, to look out at this world and think, what I really want is how to become happy. And how to become happy? You put the soul in touch with Krishna, everyone becomes satisfied. Okay, Any question? Any comment? Anything at all? Thank you, Prabhus. We're done. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai. I got it. Thanks, Prabhu. Huh? I'm up to the challenge. Thanks. Oh, that's the gate coming down. That's what that sound is. It's all yours. Take it. Thanks. What are you going to do with it? That's it.
Imagine if I can translate, or she wants to ask you a question.
Ask away.